What sparked you about this project? What got you moving and motivated?
Well, as a video production unit at the university, part of our role is to document the research. And we do this for the news media, and also every grant that comes in that funds research will require some sort of outreach component to tell the public about why the public and via the government should be investing in this type of research. So we get contracted with a lot of research projects to document what they're doing. And we went out initially to produce a series of videos for the National Science Foundation about this research. And when we went on our first shoot, right away we saw how dramatic this problem was. At the time, the number was 40% of the world's coral reefs have disappeared in the last 50 years due to human causes. And now that number's up over 50%. And we thought, well, okay, we need to do more than a series of videos. We need to do something that's an event, something that gets people into a theater to talk about this. And a feature film is the perfect vehicle for that.
Where was that first shoot?
That was on the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, in the northern reaches of the reef, which is one of the areas that has been the most seriously devastated by coral bleaching and other phenomena that are just cropping up more and more as every year goes on.
Now, when you talk about the collaboration with members of the university, the research itself and the scientists behind it, when you decided to go the route of a full-length documentary, how common is that to happen within a university system?
You know, I haven't seen a parallel where there is a university producing a feature-length documentary. Now, there are a lot of research documentaries or environmental documentaries usually produced by independent producers. But for a university to do that, it's not quite as common. And that sort of fusion of the emotional storytelling with the science side is kind of unique. And it was a learning process, really, for us as filmmakers to really dig into the science and try and do something that was really supportive of the science and accurate. And for our scientists, it was really eye-opening because we came along and pointed our cameras at the local communities that were affected by the corals. And we did a lot of interviews with fishermen, with tourism operators, and just people who live along these reefs and derive their livelihood from it. So that was sort of eye-opening for the researchers who are usually used to focusing on their subject, on these corals, and not necessarily the wider communities. So we brought that filmmaker lens along, and it was really a back and forth relationship that helped both of us out.
For the listener who might be interested in seeing the documentary, can you kind of give an itinerary where you traveled?
We started off in Australia, and we also went to the Red Sea off of Saudi Arabia. We went to French Polynesia and the Southern Pacific, to Hawaii, and also the Caribbean. And the research project even covered more locations than that. And we were able to go along to these five key locations and document in those areas. And really, they're trying to get a global perspective. Dr. Vega Thurber's project is called the Global Coral Microbiome Project. And they're trying to sample and get a genetic map of corals around the world to see how they are being affected globally by human factors like climate change, pollution, overfishing, and those sorts of things.
What is the goal of you as a producer and a filmmaker when it comes to folks watching this? I mean, what do you hope the takeaway will be? Do you offer solutions for everyday people?
Yeah, that's something that we tried to do. I think a big challenge is the pace of change in the environment is so rapid right now that it can be overwhelming and it can be demoralizing when you have bleaching events affecting corals year after year after year. But there are simple things that people can do just by watching their carbon footprint or how they use water and what types of products they support. So there's a host of things that people can do. And we have a website at coralreefmovie.org where folks can find those things. So the solution to this, to a global problem, really requires both little things that people do, but it also definitely requires the might of nations, is what we say in the narration of the film. You know, nations need to enact policies that encourage practices society-wide that will help protect these areas. But individuals can do something as well, and any solution that solves this problem is going to require the broad spectrum from little things to big things. And that's something we wanted to emphasize, that, you know, it starts with individual actions. And then a subset of those people who are willing to make those individual actions might get involved in activism or politics, or in reach out to their legislators. And that in turn will spur, you know, governments and large organizations and corporations to act. So it really is a holistic approach that needs to happen to solve this.
Yeah. How did you get Peter Coyote?
That was just, we reached out to him through the regular channels. Having a recognizable voice adds weight to your message and to the project. So we were looking for someone, and we just reached out to him through regular channels, and he was very interested in doing this type of work. We wanted somebody who believed in the film and also had the power, you know, of their reputation. So, and it just worked out really well. And he was amazing to work with. When he reads your script, it sounds like the truth, you know. So a great way to sound like a better writer is to have Peter Coyote read your work out loud.
Indeed. So did anyone stand out as the star, maybe someone unexpected, someone in a village or someone that you talked to, anyone who personally impacted you on your travels?
Oh, there were so many people that that impressed us, from Aboriginal youth in Australia. We filmed a camp of Aboriginal youth studying to become marine scientists. But I think it was collectively a village called Boca Chica in Colombia that was facing the loss of their local reef due to a dredging project that would allow larger ships into the ports at Cartagena. And these villagers who were, you know, kind of tough, strapping fishermen, entrepreneurs who are really scraping together a living, became emotional when they started talking about their families and the impact of this dredging project potentially on their livelihoods. And just to see them open up and share their stories, and to see them become emotional when they thought of their kids, and to see the kind of connection that they had with their kids who were there with them as they're working, really impressed upon us how important this issue is, and how there are kind of everyday heroes at those local points fighting to protect things that are important to them that we don't even think of. You know, we think of these places as places we can visit, you know, as tourists, and we don't even think often of the people just affected by the fact that that's where they go to get protein when they can't afford to buy chicken or pork. They go out to the reef to get fish to feed their families. So several of those fishermen in Colombia really stood out to us as people who were working on a day-to-day basis to help their families and fight on the behalf of this ecosystem that sustains them.
At what point in the documentary are we introduced to this village?
That's in some of the opening scenes. We start to establish it and show some of the children. And actually, we filmed a class that scientists were giving to the kids of this village, sort of as an in exchange for the help that the people of Boca Chica were given to their research project. And so that's how we started to get incorporated into that story. So that's introduced as sort of an anchor or thread throughout the film, the story of this village in Colombia. And we look at other different points around the world too, like Morea in the South Pacific. We spent an entire several days on a fishing trip with a local Polynesian fisherman as well, just to kind of immerse the audience in how people interact with these ecosystems. People interested in seeing the film, eventually it'll be available through distribution channels, and we're working on those and sorting those out now, but we're starting with our events portion of the rollout of the film. So it will be screening at places. We've been speaking with different groups in Portland that want to host, and in the Valley. We'll be in Roseburg in Douglas County on May 17th, doing a screening with the Douglas County Global Warming Coalition is hosting us. So everyone from community organizations, and even in Boca Chica in July, we'll be screening this for the people that were actually in the film in their hometown. And Australia, Hawaii. So people can go to our website, and look for upcoming events. And if they are interested in hosting an event in some capacity, they're welcome to reach out to us. And then eventually it'll be available on iTunes and other distribution channels as well.
Great.
I am full-time on the video production unit.
Okay.
And we work with students, media production students, help us out on these projects. And we're starting to integrate it more into the curriculum, too. So we have plans for taking this, using it as a model for documentary storytelling classes and things like that, so that we can get students engaged in science-based storytelling, because we have researchers and graduate students going all over the world. And we want to capture more of that and get more of these the important kind of ecological and social impacts of that research told in the video form.
David, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your work.
Okay, thanks, Tiffany.